Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, journalist Glenn Greenwald. He'll give us an update on Edward Snowden. And we'll look in on the latest developments in the presidential race. Three Republicans officially getting in the last day. But also Martin O'Malley, the former mayor of Baltimore for 8 years, former governor of Maryland. Does everything that has happened in that city help his presidential campaign or hurt it? Might he even not get into the race now after his zero-tolerance police policies have become a matter of public discussion? But first, one down, one out, one left standing. That is the scorecard as of yesterday of Albany's proverbial three men in a room as U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara continues his focus on corruption in New York State. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver stepped down from leadership after his arrest in January, as you know, and yesterday saw the arrest of State Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos. Here is U.S. Attorney Bharara explaining this case.
The complaint charges in six counts that Dean Skelos unlawfully used his power and influence as Senate Majority Leader repeatedly to illegally enrich his son, Adam, and indirectly himself. As alleged, father and son entered into a scheme to monetize Dean Skelos' official position by extorting money from others for Adam Skelos with the expectation that such payments would influence the official actions of Dean Skelos.
As of now, as far as we know, Skelos stays as majority leader, but with pressure from Democrats and some from his own party to step down. That leaves the governor so far unfazed, but even before Skelos' arrest, warning that legislating the rest of this term could prove difficult, and with a lot they're supposed to act on before the end of the session next month. Affordable housing, mayoral control of schools, the DREAM Act, the minimum wage, and more. Is this all falling victim to the distraction of corruption? Joining me now on the activity in Albany are Chris Smith, contributing editor for New York Magazine, and WNYC's New York State political reporter, Karen Rouse. Hi, Karen. Welcome back, Chris.
Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
What is Skelos basically charged with? Chris, using his legislative sway to steer business to his son and the companies he worked for?
Yeah, essentially not enriching himself, not pocketing any money, but causing government contracts and money to be steered to his son, trying to introduce state legislation that would benefit the company for which Adam Skelos was working. So, you know, essentially corrupting the political process for the benefit of his own family.
Karen Rouse, you're in Albany, and I see The Republicans in the Senate met last night and emerged saying Skelos would stay in charge. Was that a close call?
Yeah, you know, I think it was interesting because at the beginning of the day, you saw people calling for him to step down, and it was coming from Republicans and Democrats. You know, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who is the leader of the Democratic caucus in the Senate, was the first to come out after we saw the charges released in the morning. And then you saw, you know, on the Assembly side, Claudia Tenney. You saw Rob Astorino, who was the Republican candidate for governor last year. And you saw a couple of Senate Republicans say that he needed to step down. So it seemed like there was fracturing. But they went in last night. They met for 3 hours. Skelos came back. There was, of course, a lot of media waiting for him. He walked through the halls, didn't answer any questions, just said he's going to talk to his caucus. And when they came out, they said there was a strong consensus. They didn't say it was unanimous, but they said there was strong consensus for him to remain not just a GOP leader, but leader in the Senate.
Did they say why?
No, there was not really any discussion. And I think that that's what we're going to be looking for today, is especially from those members who said that he should step down, you know. And then there were a couple of members who seemed interested in the position. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them. Are they going to be working behind the scenes like we saw with the Assembly leader, former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, where we saw people come out in the beginning and stand up and say, yeah, we're going to stand behind him. But then you saw people who were interested in the position sort of working behind the scenes to gain support. You know, is that going to be going on today?
As to that why question, just one footnote, I'm forgetting. I think it was State Senator LaValle, the Republican who spoke afterwards, said there's a presumption of innocence, you know, which is important in the larger system, but important to them selfishly because these investigations are not done. And there's a lot of folks, you know, worried about their own status and so fighting back against Preet Bharara is in their own interest in some ways.
Yeah, so the 43-page complaint doesn't name the cooperating witnesses, but from what it does reveal, it's reported that Glenwood Management Executive Charles Dorego is one of them. Capital New York reporter Jimmy Vielkind points out that he is well known in Albany and has given a lot of money to a lot of legislators and the governor. So, Karen, how nervous are people in the State House?
Well, you know, I think some people are nervous. I mean, especially in the complaint, one of the things that really stuck out was the whole idea of wiretaps. and people are, some people say, oh, well, we figured phones were tapped anyway. And other people are a little squeamish about it. But, you know, what's interesting is that there are still people who, the fact they want Skelos to remain in power as their leader, and the fact that some people who may actually be are being looked at by Preet Bharara, that they are still wanting to be in positions of power, I think it indicates there's some sort of disconnect between how people are looking at this whole situation, how they are looking at corruption, and the reality that they may also be in trouble too. So I think that some people are nervous about it, but others, I think, are just trying to hope that nothing changes and hope that this passes.
The charge against Skelos, Chris, it seems so brazen if what's alleged is true. And so, I don't know, premeditated. Like, as soon as he became majority leader in 2011, he set about trying to monetize, in Bharara's words, that position, and set about working with his son for his son to benefit from, you know, his father's new leadership post. Skelos has been known as somebody who's interested in policy. He runs that caucus. He's come on the show. He's talked about right and wrong, according to him, at a policy level. Was he just in this for the money?
Well, interestingly, even Bharara, who characterized it as monetizing his position, said pretty explicitly that Skelos himself didn't directly benefit, didn't in a cash sense benefit, though his son was clearly employed for these reasons, it appears. Now, Skelos' lawyers will do a better job of arguing this side of it than I can, but yes, we have Bharara's side of the story. Skelos will say, yeah, I'm interested in policy, and these were things that I thought would benefit the district, you know, would benefit the people of Long Island. And is it criminal to, use your connections to work the system to deliver things to the home district? You know, the fact that his son was involved does make it a good deal, you know, more debatable. But this is the argument that Bharara and, to some extent, Governor Andrew Cuomo have been having for the past 2 years. What's politics and what's illegal?
And listeners, if you want to call up on the line between what's politics and what's illegal or anything regarding the latest charges against a leader in Albany, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For WNYC's Albany reporter Karen Rouse and Chris Smith from New York Magazine. By the way, for some of you, this is an election day. Just a reminder, if you live in the district formerly represented in Congress by Michael Grimm, that's Staten Island and part of South Brooklyn, don't forget you can go to the polls today if you're registered to vote and choose between the Democrat, Vincent Gentile, the Republican, Dan Donovan, and the Green Party candidate. There is also a Green Party candidate on the ballot if you're kind of disgusted with the two major parties and want to cast a protest vote or just align with the Green Party's positions and values. In any case, Election Day, also a very interesting and strange, in a way, race in the 43rd State Assembly District in Brooklyn. And we will get to that with Karen and Chris as we go here. But staying on the implications of the Dean Skelos case. Karen, I listed at the beginning of the segment some of the things that the legislature is supposed to do before the end of the term next month, affordable housing, mayoral control of schools, renewal, the DREAM Act, the minimum wage. Is this all falling apart now, or is whoever's going to lead, whether it's Scalos or somebody to replace him, and ultimately you have the Republican Senate and the Democratic Assembly and you have the governor, and somebody will be in that three people in the room and knock out an agreement on these things?
You know, on the Assembly side, they are still very focused on accomplishing these things. The DREAM Act, minimum wage, they actually dealt with minimum wage yesterday. They passed a bill, and they're just waiting for the Senate side to deal with that. The DREAM Act is a priority for them, as is dealing with a lot of women's issues and the Women's Equality Act issues. They have that on their plate today. And criminal justice, they're actually going to be talking about that on Thursday. So they're forging ahead. As far as the Senate side, I think that that's what they want to do. I think they want to move forward. And also rent control, of course, is a big deal for the Assembly side, the Democratic-controlled Assembly. But I think realistically, I think a lot of things, especially rent control, and when we talk about 421A, which is has to do with tax breaks for development for real estate, I think that's going to be looked at differently. And I think that the Senate side is going to be scrutinized differently, given the complaint and the allegations made, and people are going to be wondering, like, how are these decisions being made, and you know, is there more to it? Is there some sort of corruption going behind it? So I think that will color it. But on the Assembly side, they're not really reacting much to what happened yesterday. They just seem to be moving ahead and want to just accomplish these things, because we really only have a few weeks left in the session.
What's interesting is two things on all these issues. The math hasn't changed. I mean, to simplify, the Assembly votes, the Senate Republican votes, they're all still where they were. You know, even though the atmospherics have changed in the past few days, even though the level of chaos seems to have increased, people's positions in the legislature and the governor's office, by and large, haven't. What's happening very quickly is people seeing the chaos as opportunity. One specific example of that today in the Daily News, you have a column by Juan Gonzalez in which Mayor de Blasio lays out his proposals on how to change rent regulations. City Hall on rent regulations, on 421A in particular, sees this moment as the real estate industry being weakened. You know, for years, an enormous, powerful donor to political candidates. Now, with all the scrutiny inflicted by Barrera, you know, people are worried about their association to some extent with the real estate industry.
Karen, talk more about 421A. This is supposed to be a tax break for developers that build affordable housing, but it's gotten by developers who don't build affordable housing. Is that why it's controversial?
Well, I think the controversy is that a lot of people don't feel that the developers need so much incentive. You know, a lot of people feel like the incentives that they get are too high, and that they would build even if they didn't get them. They would argue differently. But I think that the issue now is that with the allegations of the complaint showing that or alleging that Scalos was working on behalf of developers as opposed to for the people, that's going to really bring more scrutiny on the Senate and what decisions they make about 421A.
Yeah, there's a couple tensions there. You know, this moment is difficult for the real estate industry in the long term. You know, legislators know that money isn't going to go away. What the advocates, the progressive advocates, City Hall, the case they're trying to make is that not only is it the right thing to do, you know, we talk about the incentives to build in 421A, the housing advocates, City Hall, are arguing that the requirements to build affordable housing as parts of development are not high enough or not strict enough, and that needs to be changed, and that they're trying to set up different incentives. Okay, if the real estate industry, you know, you're trying to, in the short term at least, disassociate yourself, well, can the labor unions on the other side step in, both in terms of, you know, backing you in elections And in terms of applying pressure in the short term, you know, whether it's ads or other things like we saw in the fight over the school system in the recent budget negotiations. City Hall and the advocates, you know, think there's a moment here to try to get some movement, but that they have to seize it because as we get closer to mid-June, when the legislative session is scheduled to end, the default position is just extending everything, whether it's mayoral control or the real estate stuff. The incentive to just extend everything and get out of town as quickly as possible, that's really going to increase.
Joyce in Manhattan has a question about the criminal complaint against Scalos and Son. Right, Joyce?
Yeah, hi. Is it me you're
yes,
looking for?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, what I was struck by when this was all discussed is the company that Skelos hired that apparently paid the Son is from Arizona. And I found myself wondering, aren't there companies that can do environmental work that are located in New York State or even better on Long Island?
If they're going to
go all the way to the Southwest for a company to do this?
If they're going to take dirty money, couldn't they find one in Huntington
well,
or something?
I think as a policy, you know, Cuomo talks all the time about bringing business to New York State and how we support it and
right.
all the rest of it.
Let's keep our corruption local. Yes.
It's really a great question. Why have either of you looked into the complaint enough to know why this company from Arizona was the one in the first place?
I don't know. I don't know enough about the environmental industry. You know, clearly their advantage was Adam Skelos was working with them. You know, there's some poetic or metaphorical brilliance about the fact that we're talking about political corruption and that it's involving dirty stormwater and sewers.
You know, I think from having read the part of it that I did yesterday, that the connection is that there was a local person who had an interest in that company in Arizona.
Right. Well, Glenwood, the real estate company, was an investor in that Arizona company.
There you go.
The sequence, the chronology of events, you know, who came first, the Glenwood investment or the Adam Skelos, I apologize, but I'm not clear on that chain of events.
On another policy, Karen, I noticed that Mayor de Blasio put out a statement again just last night calling the minimum wage the most powerful tool that people could use right now to reduce income inequality. And obviously there are many things on the mayor's plate to reduce inequality, but he said that's the most powerful tool we have right at this moment. I assume he was referring to the state legislature. And Dean Skelos was the person standing more in the way of the kind of minimum wage increase that Mayor de Blasio wanted for the city than anyone else. So does Skelos' position on that get weakened?
Well, I think definitely. I mean, because from an ideological perspective, I mean, when you look at that complaint and if those allegations are true, you know, it's and he's pushing and demanding money for his son for work that he didn't do, but yet doesn't want to give a minimum wage increase to people who are working. You know, people are going to really be struck by that and I think really feel offended by that even. So I think that does weaken his argument. I think everything he does from here on out is going to be looked at differently and in the context of, well, you did this for your son, but you don't want, you know, I'm working and I'm, you know, I deserve a raise. I should live at a certain level. And there was a part of the complaint where he demanded more money and there was a phrase, something like, you know, because Adam Skelos was falling on hard times or was struggling. And it was really striking that he would be demanding tens of thousands of dollars and then demand more and claim that his son is really suffering financially, but not recognize that same struggle for people who want an increase in the minimum wage.
And Adam Skelos had no background in the environmental field, which makes it look even more like he was just being paid because of his political connections. And at some point, that becomes illegal. You know, you can pay people because of their connections, and at a certain point it becomes corruption. And I guess that's the line that they're going to have to look for in court. But also, Chris, some of the details about pressuring this company for more money that came out yesterday were so unseemly, at least as alleged by Preet Bharara, like on the way into the funeral of one of the two police officers who was shot and killed in December, and again on the way out, Scalos is pressuring, you know, the representative of this company to make payments. Now, I mean, I guess people talk about things other than, you know, death and tragedy and political horror at funerals, but still it has this unseemly bent.
Yes, unseemly is a good word. Tawdry, I think, is another good word. And that, in a political context, is damaging. You know, in a legal context, I don't know that that is actually something that gets someone convicted. You know, there's this much quoted line by Adam Skelos, you know, on the phone about Barrara listening in on everyone's conversations. But again, you know, not to apologize for it, that's colorful, but probably not, you know, damning. One of the interesting things that's interesting in the politics here, I don't know that Skelos's position on minimum wage changes because of the scrutiny, but another part, two other parts of the puzzle, in a larger sense, there's going to be pressure for the legislature to show that it works, to show that it can get things done, to show that it's not completely dysfunctional again simply because of these distractions. Another argument that fits in with that is that, you know, the progressives, the left, a lot of the in New York State politics, mainstream Democrats will argue to Governor Cuomo that, look, you know, you had a very successful partnership with the Senate Republicans from time to time. That can't be maintained anymore. You know, your base, particularly your voters in New York City, want these things. If you are really serious about running for a third term in 2018, you know, you need to get with the program in terms of rent regulations, 421A, mayoral control, because that's New York City.
And to that point, Karen, looking at the minimum wage issue, maybe it's better for Democrats who want a larger minimum wage increase that Skelos stay as the leader of the Republicans in the Senate. If they've got this sort of catch-22 paradox on him right now, oh, you were asking for all this money for your son for his no-show job or not real job, at the same time that you're denying minimum wages to people around New York State, and he's kind of shamed into agreeing to a larger minimum wage hike. Maybe it's better for the Democrats if he stays than if he's replaced by somebody who doesn't have that baggage.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly, I think, gives them leverage. You know, like Chris said, it's not illegal, but certainly they can use that from a public standpoint to pressure him and to pressure the Senate into giving serious consideration to raising the minimum wage and forcing them to really talk about it. And, you know, I think that just also raises the point that Skelos, you know, if he wants to stay, there are going to be challenges for him. I mean, he's going to be constantly having to defend himself and really look at the way he leads and the way he interacts with lobbyists and his own party. And, you know, I think that's going to be a challenge for him, especially if there are people in his party or in his conference, other Republicans in the Senate, who want that position, who are interested in taking over the leadership.
And I guess even Skelos could stand up there and say, look, I'm innocent of the charges against me, and this has nothing to do with the minimum wage, which is bad policy, it's bad for business, it destroys low-wage jobs, et cetera, all the arguments that he would normally make, so maybe it doesn't affect it at all.
One of the other things Senate Republicans are looking at, you know, maybe Skelos gets through this session holding on to the job as majority leader, but they have a very thin majority. They're looking at a 2016 campaign where Hillary Clinton's at the top of the national ticket, and if they've got a majority leader with this kind of baggage where he may be on trial at that point, you know, that's a very, very heavy lift.
They could actually lose the Senate. All right, there's a couple of minutes left here. And, Chris, I just want to touch on the special election, which we haven't covered on the show before, but looks like it's really interesting. And there's no Democratic candidate. There is a Working Families Party candidate to fill an empty assembly seat in the Crown Heights, Lefferts Gardens, East Flatbush area of Brooklyn. That's the 43rd Assembly District, for those of you who know your number. Kareem Kamara stepped down to head the governor's office of faith-based community development. But somehow there's no Democrat on the ballot there. What happened?
It's, you know, a fascinating local politics story. Essentially, the Kings County Democratic Party wasn't apparently paying attention and didn't bother to fill the seats on the board that controls nominations. And they were grabbed by a guy named Guillermo Philpotts. I just like saying that name, who's, you know, a local activist and perennial political participant, occasional candidate. And he was going to run himself as the Democrat, then bowed out for reasons that are murky. And so the Democrats ended up with no official candidate. The Working Families Party probably, you know, because they're very good at organizing these kind of grassroots campaign, has the upper hand in this. What's interesting in that race?
We'll see, right? I mean, people have to know that it's there. This is a liberal part of Brooklyn. So,
And what's interesting is it's an area going through gentrification and this kind of development that ties us back to 421A. You know, there's a lot of unhappiness about what's going on with housing there, and that's been a major issue in the campaign.
But even though it's a relatively Democratic-leaning area, if people don't know about the Working Families Party, they may see no Democrat and a Republican and Working Families Party. What's that? We all know, as, you know, political journalists, what the Working Families Party is. Maybe not everybody does. Then again, how many people are going to turn out for this election, except those who are really involved in one way or another? But it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And the Democrats won't lose their majority in the assembly anyway, no matter how it turns out. You know, but maybe they'll have an interesting squeaky wheel. Maybe there'll be a Bernie Sanders of New York State.
Right.
If there's a Working Families Party candidate who didn't affiliate with the Democrats.
Right. And it's an interesting time in the broader context for the assembly, too, with Carl Hastie, you know, now replacing Shelley Silver and opening up to some extent, you know, the assembly to younger and different voices. You know, Hastie comes out of a Bronx kind of clubhouse culture, so how much of a reformer he really is still open to question. But, you know, one more non-establishment voice coming into the assembly, it doesn't change it completely, but it adds a little bit to the momentum.
And just so you know the names, folks, that Working Families Party candidate is Diana Richardson. The Independence Party candidate, who had been the presumed Democratic nominee before the party line debacle, is Shirley Patterson. And then there's somebody named Jeffrey Davis, brother of Councilman James Davis, who was shot at City Hall in 2003, running on the self-created Love Yourself line. So you can vote for Jeffrey Davis on the Love Yourself line.
Right, and we talk about the Working Families being good at, you know, these kinds of races. Shirley Patterson has some significant institutional support herself, you know, been endorsed by a number of current elected officials.
Including Borough President Eric Adams.
Right, not insignificant.
Endorsing the now Independence Party candidate Shirley Patterson, who was going to be the Democratic Party candidate, it looked like. No Republican on this ballot.
I believe there's
there's also a Republican.
I think he may also be an Orthodox Jewish gentleman.
Okay, forgive me for not having that name, if in fact there is a Republican on that ballot. But there you go. If you live in the 43rd Assembly District in East Flatbush, Lefferts Gardens, Crown Heights, around there. And remember, it's also Election Day for that open congressional seat. Oh, now I have the Republican's name. It's Menachem Rateport, or Mendy Rateport. That's the Republican candidate in the 43rd, and the congressional race also on Staten Island in South Brooklyn between Gentile and Donovan and Lane, the Green Party candidate. Again, Chris Smith from New York Magazine. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
WNYC's Albany correspondent, Karen Rouse. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Brian.
And we'll look next at developments in the presidential race, including the second major policy announcement of Hillary Clinton's young campaign coming today. And it looks like she'll take a pretty, full-throated position on immigration reform. Stay with us.